Well, hi there, football fans. Welcome to the important post-game show. As you know, those of you who watched the Patriots, and my engineer Ernie Skenton is thrilled about it, won the game in one of the dullest Super Bowls in history.
I'll just say I'm thrilled because I won a couple bucks. It's not that I love the Patriots.
And I wasn't particularly impressed with the commercials. I wasn't particularly impressed with the halftime show. Given what they pay for the halftime show, I'm going to suggest that next year, perhaps they will entertain my three guests for the next 45 minutes, Steve Monroe, Andy Schultz, and Keenan Kyles, who were part of an upcoming show called The War to End All Wars. This is a show. Welcome, gentlemen, first of all. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
No one was willing to come in last week because of the vortex, but now it's nice to have everybody back in the saddle. This show is kind of a cabaret incorporating music and stories and a lot of other things, all hooked on World War One. I need to know how this show came to be. What's the seed of this show?
Well, really, Andy and I met after seeing a production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yep.
One of Andy's vocal students. And we just got to talking about musicals. Andy is involved in many things, which he'll let you know about a few of them.
Sure, I want to know. I want to get to know, and yeah. I want the listeners to get to know all three of you, too.
I have a musical theater background, You know, I go back in time to the Kingston Mines Theater. I take that back. I go back to Bob Sickinger. He's the one that
really...
I remember
Bob Sickinger.
He got me going.
But you were in the original Grease?
Yes.
With Gary Houston.
Right. Polly Penn.
Polly Penn. That's right, Mary Lou Henner.
Yeah, who has a new TV show now, I think, right
she
now.
She does?
Yeah, I just saw in a Super Bowl commercial.
That's a durable career.
Yeah.
No one from that show. There was a guy named Steve Canning, I think, who was taken from the
Jim
Chicago...
Jim Canning,
yeah. Who was taken... But no one else was taken from the Chicago cast to the, you know, it once was the longest-running musical on Broadway.
Well, he wasn't originally... He was in the original Broadway cast, but they didn't cast him initially. They had a hard time finding Duty. You know, later on, Travolta plays Duty.
Oh, sure, you know? Sure.
That's how he gets introduced into the cast. But Canning was the only, but really, Mary Lou joined later, you know, when they were putting a roadshow together.
Let me ask you before we get into your careers, gentlemen. What did you think? I saw the original at the Kingston Mines twice, maybe because Polly was in it and Gary Houston worked for my dad, so I got free tickets to sit in that, what was a crummy former, you know, the bus barn or something. What did you think of the show, Steve, when you were written?
I was the only one in the cast that thought it was a monster hit.
Really?
Literally, I was the only one in the cast. Even the director, Guy Burriel, didn't think it was. I knew it was. I just, you know, I had worked with Jim.
Yeah.
And Warren, you know, was a...
Warren Casey and Jim
Jacobs,
was
a fantastic actor. And they started Kingston Mines Theater, along with June Pekosik and Jack Wallace and others. And I had already been familiar. I'd worked with Jim at Hull House.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what a great actor he was. And his energy is unbelievable. And just the energy alone and his story combined with, and this was the magic, was Warren Casey's his sense of humor.
Yeah.
His ability to be funny in the songs. Like It's Raining on Prom Night is a perfect example. Our favorite song, by the way. The entire cast sang it every night, never got tired of it.
We'll talk.
You could hear us in the audience.
We'll talk later in this segment about reuniting you being in the cast for that American Theater when they did the original show 40 years later.
Yeah.
So, Andy, you two guys start talking to each other.
Right.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, of course, being of a vintage way, way before World War One. But so what did you say to each other? What was it about World War One and the music and the stories of...
Well, I'm not exactly sure how it came out, but Steve said that his grandfather was in World War One in the Lafayette Escadrille. And I said, wow, that's a good starting point. I bet we could find all kinds of interesting things to do, both musically and theatrically, relative to World War One, and that we can do something that is very rarely done. We can make it personal.
Yeah.
We can talk about our families and talk about our memories and talk about
people. You have a familiar familial connection too, don't you, to World War One?
Well, I think everybody I'm sitting next to ultimately is going to have a familial connection to World War One. But mine is a little interesting because my grandfather was in the German army in World War One.
Did you know your grandfather?
You know, I did not.
But you knew stories and
were all of the stories about what happened to him during World War One. I won't go in too deeply. But he was captured in the first week of the war.
And Steve, did you know your grandfather?
Oh yes, quite well. What really was interesting, he was, I think, classic. I've since learned, I've done some research, you know.
You would hope, you guys did some research.
But some wonderful organizations that I like to plug along the way.
Sure.
You know, well, I got Andy involved with the Centennial Commission, World War One Centennial Commission. It's national. Their main task is to build a monument. Believe it or not, there is no monument in Washington for World War One.
That's interesting.
And so they have created a design, and it's going to happen, but they still need additional funding. Jennifer Pritzker,
who runs the Pritzker Military Museum,
yeah, which is a wonderful place.
Oh, yes.
And they do presentations and everything. You know, we hope to perform there in addition, by the way. They want us. We're a good fit there, for sure. But we were involved in many of their meetings and affairs. And also at the UIC, we did a presentation during the week of the Armistice Week, where we performed with an orchestra of about 50 instruments.
You guys begin to conceptualize this show. Mm-hmm. Saying, hey, here's an interesting tune that would work here, and here's an interesting story. And then you go out and find this young opera singer, Ken and Kyles. When they approached you, Ken, and how did that work? Had you known these two gentlemen before?
Yeah, so I take voice lessons with Andy, and I also did a performance with Steve.
Oh, so they could easily put the arm on you.
I don't know how easy it was, but they were able to persuade me. Andy had... at one of our voice lessons had just mentioned that there was a whole regiment that was all black.
That's a fascinating element of this thing, because I certainly did not
from
know that.
Chicago.
Yeah.
And that was a way to kind of like spoon me in so that I could represent and pay homage to the 370th Infantry.
So how long have the three of you been working on this? You were supposed to have, I guess it was, it would have been your premiere show last week, and it got sort of derailed by the polar vortex, but you have shows coming up February 9th and 10th in Skokie, and another one coming up. We're going to give you all the information you need about that. But how long did it take all of you, because it's much bigger than just the three of you. There are about eight.
Well, about 2 years, I think.
Yeah, I think we've been working 2 years.
Including, we did a performance utilizing Andy's, primarily your students. And we did it at the Admiral, not the Stormy Admiral.
Yes,
the
right.
Admiral on the lakefront.
Oh, I know that well. Well, the great thing is, I know I went up and actually reviewed the astonishingly not talented Stormy Daniels when she appeared at the Admiral. But I have friends now, being of a certain age, who live at the Admiral up there. How did it go over?
It was great when we did it at the Admiral.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's part of what made us feel that we could take it to another level, because the Admiral is quite a sophisticated audience.
Oh, no question.
They just were eating it up. They were
Before us, they had Whiffenpoo in.
As you start to sort of put all this in the cauldron, the creative cauldron, you're doing it with the notion of what? I mean, being pragmatic about it, to make a theatrical presentation?
For me, yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
And having gone through Greece and other things other in my life, but Greece certainly was a great example.
No question.
Or Flora the Red Menace, that for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, that you can make something happen, you know, when you have great talent, the right energy, and help. You need a lot of help along the way.
No question. We want to, in the next segment, after a short commercial break, talk specifically about the narrative of this show, how you mix, and I'm always fascinated with the mix of story and song, and this sounds right up that alley. So I'll be back with Steve Monroe, Andy Schultz, and Ken and Kyle's after a short little commercial break. Welcome back. We're having a musical selection from Ernie Skatten, who is celebrating his Super Bowl victory. A few coins in his pocket. We're also talking with Steve Monroe, Andy Schultz, and Ken and Kyle's about their new show, The War to End All Wars, which is billed as a cabaret, but sounds very much to me like a theatrical performance. It's going to be, you can judge for yourself, on February 9th and 10th at the Old World Theater in Skokie, which is actually what? The Old World Theater is a temple.
It is the CKE.
It's a synagogue.
It is a synagogue. That our mentor, Bill Raffeld, who is really an unsung hero in the world of theater. I don't know if you know Bill.
Yeah, I know who he is, sure.
You know, taught many years, going back to Navy Pier.
Sure.
And even has an office still at UIC.
Wow.
And the keys to every room, practically, in the theater department. But he put together the alum, which I'm one of the alum, and we do a season of plays there. And he is open to anyone that was an alum now, not, you know, even if you were not a theater major there.
Yeah.
So occasionally it'll be a great treat for somebody who was going to dentistry, say, to be in the show.
That's what you want, dentists performing. Yeah. You say theatrical, and you label The War to End All Wars cabaret. All of you gentlemen, and just, you know, talk over one another. What's the narrative of this? Is it a one-act show? Is it a two-act show? Is it music alternating with stories? Tell me.
It is music alternating with stories. It isn't. Yeah. We have decided to put it into one act. Approximately an hour and 10 minutes is what the typical run would be. It is a mixture. Music is so important, though, to the soldiers who, you know, the main thrust here for me is to remember these soldiers, remember the people of that time, remember my grandfather especially.
Sure.
And to keep that memory alive for people close to me and to anybody who will listen. Because so many people know nothing or little.
See, this is one thing that intrigues me so much about it, in that I didn't know anything about the Black Devils, even though there is which was the 370th Infantry, even though there is a statue in their honor at 35th and King Drive. Keenan Kyle didn't know anything about it either, and that's one of the things that attracted you to it. Mm-hmm. This is, it's an interesting kind of hook you have here, in that it's not come celebrate your ancient ancestors, it's more, it's an enlightenment, don't you think, gentlemen?
Yes, and particularly about Chicago, too. So much happened here, so much transformed in Chicago because of World War I, the entire world, of course. But so many things happened here, going all the way. The committee still exists because of the race riots that occur in 1919.
Right. Sure.
We're still active on the committee about this, making sure that the plaque is improved upon. It is out on the lakefront that very few people know about.
I know.
That the students of York High School, Carl Sandburg's school, he was the one that was very responsible as a journalist about that, the race riots. I don't know if you've read about that or not.
Sure. Because there were, you know, anniversary pieces recently in the paper about it.
I was crazy about wanting to write something about Jane Addams, because Jane Addams, Hull House Theater, right?
Sure.
You know? And she loved theater. You know, absolutely loved theater. And she was a pacifist.
Well, and she also saw its value to kids who had nothing else. I mean, she saw the value of the arts in general. That's why Benny Goodman learned to play the clarinet there, for goodness sake.
And Jane Addams was President Woodrow Wilson's ear. He brought her to Washington 5 or 6 times for private conferences, without an interpreter, by the way, I think. And she was very important to him as he maintained his pacifism, which, of course, flipped, you know, after he got his election, of course, he suddenly, you know, decided we needed to enter the war.
Wow. Keenan, you interest me very much because you were a young man who was an opera singer.
Yes.
And opera, proverbially, recently is having, and you'll see stories about this everywhere, it's having such a hard time, even the lyric, attracting young people to opera. How were you drawn to opera?
As a child, I had joined the Chicago Children's Choir.
That's a great organization.
And from then on, I did the Gallery 37 program with Andy when I was like 12 years old. And he ran the operatics ensemble. And we did Le Nozze di Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro. We did Candide. So on top of having the Chicago Children's Choir that focused a lot on classical choral music,
right,
I had Andy that focused a lot on opera chorus and roles and things like that. And it was just something so interesting to me about opera that I did not hear at the time around my neighborhood. I grew up in Brainerd on the South Side.
I mean, you can say that, though. That's probably true of a vast number of Chicago's 70-something neighborhoods, whereas that you will not hear a lot of opera there.
Yeah. So just having that opportunity allowed me to form an escape and do something different that challenged me, that forced me to think about language different, characterization, and it just stuck with me. And I went on to Columbia, and I studied with Andy, and I still studied with him after I graduated. But he's always been that force behind me, really taking it serious.
Can you make a living at opera?
Oh, you can make a living, yeah. Of course you can make a living. It won't be like quick and
like
in a jiffy,
but
you know, you know, it takes time. Everything is hard. CNN and ABC did a huge story about me about working as a janitor support my career. So as a young opera singer, there's so many different avenues you have to take. Young artist programs and master programs and things like that. Language, it's just so many different loops that you have to go through before you actually hit that moment where it's like, oh, okay, I'm here. And I've had a lot of great accomplishments up until now, very surprising, very sporadically.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I'm happy with the route my career is going.
How old are you?
I'm 30.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's still very young. This must, Andy Schultz, must make you very proud to hear.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, because I knew him when he was knee-high to a grasshopper.
Do you find many knee-high to a grasshopper people these days being drawn to opera?
I'm going to say that it's sometimes surprising.
Really?
Because don't think of it so much as opera, but as singing. There's something about singing that transcends all kinds of other cultural barriers.
And I suppose, and tell me I'm wrong, gentlemen, Steve Miner, I don't know how well you sing. If you were in the original Grease,
okay.
He's got to be okay. What do you mean? If you could sing with Gary Houston and Polly Penny, he's got to be okay. But I would think if you are a capable, and I'm just saying capable, I'm not talking about Keenan specifically, if you can learn to be a capable opera singer, that would open up all manner of other sorts of music to you. Yes,
I think so. I think, you know, to sing on the opera stage, you have to have other attributes besides just knowing how to sing. There's the nature of the size of your voice and other accomplishments that you need to achieve.
Well, and they're also, I mean, in singing opera, most people I know, most opera singers don't sing it in a bathroom. I mean, there is an acting and emoting component to it that will serve you well in any kind of sort of musical theater, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, break down this show for me.
All
the
right.
War to End All Wars.
The title, of course, was what they thought it would be,
yes.
The only war.
If only.
And Woodrow Wilson embraced that slogan.
He had
a few others, too. For me, though, you know, it is remembering my grandfather going on a road trip to Bemidji, Minnesota, you know, when I was about 12 years old, to visit one of his sisters. And the long journey, never wanting to talk about the war, didn't know how to get anything out of him pertaining to that. He just seldom spoke about the war, which is very typical.
Oh, sure, it's typical of my father in World War II, yeah.
Except.
So does it, the show is personalized then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is
and
great.
And it is for everybody. And actually, even the segment on the Hello Girls, for instance, the actress that plays that part really is... It personalized it a great deal. This is an astonishing... I don't know if you're familiar with the telephone operators that were employed from AT&T.
Yes, that I know. My knowledge of history is so spotty, I can't even believe it.
I think it is celebrating history that really appealed to me here, to keep the memory really just going, and to the music... The variety of music.
No question. No question.
We were doing a show at Old World, the Sunshine Boys. Andy saw the production, I think. And my son, who is a musician, the music being played during intermission was Tin Pan Alley. Huh. And my son said, I like that music a lot. And I said, really? You don't like anything I do, but you like that. And
that was a big father-son rapprochement.
That stuck with me.
This is great.
Grandpa starts singing once he has some Cavazier with his sister. And he starts singing in Bemidji some of these World War I songs. And, of course, the one that stuck was Mademoiselle from Armored Tears.
That's how the show begins.
Yes.
We will continue on and try to give you a real taste of the war to end all wars and tell you the number to call and tell you when to call and what these fine gentlemen anticipate for the future of this show, which might include a trip courtesy of Jennifer Pritzker someplace, from what I hear. So please stay tuned. Tell me something good. Ernie Skatton is selecting the music for this edition, and something good is that the Patriots won, thereby increasing the bank account of engineer Ernie Skatton. I have a few more minutes left with Steve Monroe, Andy Schultz, and Kenan Kyles. We're talking about the War to End All Wars, which will be having its next performances February 9th and February 10th at the Old World Theater, which is at 5130 Toohey Avenue in Skokie at the synagogue there. Phone 312-857-8487. Ben Anderson will put that up on the site when you listen to this sometime later in the week. What are you expecting from the... I know you were, all three of you, expecting this to be a very polished and very professional show, which include about five or six other performers doing spoken... I don't know what they call it, spoken word, but reading excerpts and various stories focused on World War One and singing some of the songs of that era, especially songs that were somehow close to the soldiers who fought there. Is that about right?
Yep. I'd say.
We're not sure yet.
What we're trying to do musically is to present a real cross-section of all kinds of different things. We have art songs. We have an opera excerpt. We have popular songs. We have all kinds of different things from all kinds of different aspects of World War One. We have the very first thing, we have an opera excerpt from the opera Good Soldier Schweik.
Wow.
Composed by Robert Kirka from Cicero, Illinois.
Come on.
Yeah. That's going to be the very first large number. We're going to have French songs. We're going to have art songs. We're going to have music by Charles Ives, one of the big American avant-garde composers. But we're going to have some really great fun songs, such as You'll Have to Put Him to Sleep with the Marseillaise and Wake Him Up with an Ooh La La when he comes back from France.
A real
song by Harry von Tiltzer.
Wow.
Right?
So
Alexander's Band is back in Dixieland.
How many songs?
You know,
roughly.
Well, we shuffle them in and out, don't we, Andy? But
yeah.
I'd say there's about 20.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Actually, we have many, many more that we could use.
Sure.
As I mentioned, if we evolve the show.
How do you see, all three of you, how do you see the show evolving? Because I look at the show as it stands right now with these upcoming performances this week at the Old World Theater, and I see a tremendous, tremendous amount of potential here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, we're building a snowball, I think, with the audience. We're not the conventional type of production company that you see today. You know, so many of us went to college, like Steppenwolf, left. You know, what do you do next after leaving college? Let's start a theater company. Fortunately, many of these people have some money to begin with, with their parents and such.
Oh, sure.
That's the typical scenario.
You bet.
We looked, Andy and I looked into the not-for-profit status to try to raise some money toward this. And we just, you know, we decided just carry on with the show first. That's what we want to do. And, you know, we know that we're both experienced enough, I think. If it does catch on, we will find our match. We know of some people. I think if we invite them to the show, there might be something happening for us in a true cabaret fashion. In cabaret, it's interesting what that is. And, you know, here in Chicago, there were many at that time. You know, there were more theaters in Chicago during World War One. There were something like 800 theaters during World War One.
I know. Chicago. Well, and cabaret is something that, you know, I wrote about in Sunday's paper today about the old Gold Star Sardine Bar, which was one of the last kind of cabarets here. And Davenport's is still kind of cabaret-like, which would be a good spot for this show. I also think the Pritzker Military Library would be a wonderful venue for this show, and I know that Jennifer Pritzker, Colonel Jennifer Pritzker, would be all over this. Have you made a connection with Jennifer yet?
Oh, yes. Well, through her people, we've met her. I think, Andy, yes. I think you've met her as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we're on this committee, you know. And which was, you know, a good, very good thing. We enjoyed it. But we've met some of the people that work there. And unfortunately, their director left recently.
Right, right.
And so they have an interim director. Now they have just announced a new director. But from the people we know, I think we actually have a fighting chance to do the show. They want us to do it there.
Yeah, I'll bet they do.
I think it's a perfect. And they have a great recording studio, as you know, there.
They have state of the art everything there. Yeah. That's a great thing. You guys are too much. When you first sent me this note, Steve, I was terribly intrigued. And then meeting the three of you and learning about the three of you makes me even more confident that not only are you going to pull this off, but this is the foundation of something that will be a singular sensation, as they used to say.
Oh, okay.
A singular sensation. Accept. Yeah, I'll bet. And any guy who was in Greece with Gary Houston and Polly Penn.
And the original Greece, don't forget, is the only Greece to ever win an award.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Gentlemen, best of luck. Again, Ben will have the information on the website, but also you can call 312. Can you look up old world? You guys have a Facebook thing, don't you?
Not yet, no.
You don't?
The old world does, but we're doing a lousy job with it right now. So that is high on our list.
Okay.
We have been focusing on the music.
On the show itself.
The show. Yes.
On the show itself.
Yeah.
We'll keep at it. The phone number for tickets. 312-857-8487. It is February 9th at 8 o'clock and February 10th at 2:30. Steve Monroe, Andy Schultz, and Keenan Kyles, it is a pleasure to hear about this, and I'm going to follow it, too.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Oh, my God, my pleasure. The war to end all wars, if only that had been true. But it wasn't, so we carry on.